there's a lot of gloom and doom when we talk about the United States Postal Service, it seems. For years, we've seen stories about the agency posting huge losses, as well as declining mail volume and the possible elimination of Saturday delivery. But our next guest says there's something we can do about it.
The idea: let the post office become a bank. He says that by offering basic banking services to customers like savings accounts, debit cards, maybe even simple loans, we could save the post office and solve a lot of other problems plaguing the country.
Joining us now is David Dayton. He's a freelance writer and a contributor to Salon. We've got a link to his recent piece, How the Post Office Could Save the Economy and Change Your Life, on the Central Time Facebook page. David, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me on.
Well, you point out that the idea of postal banking isn't that new, but why is this the right time to be thinking about it again?
The time is right because there are one in four households in America, roughly, I believe around 28%, who either are unbanked, which means they don't have a bank account at all, or they are underbanked, which means they may have a bank account, but they lack stable access to financial services and use other alternative financial services. And these alternatives charge a huge premium to use these services. The average family who is unbanked or underbanked and makes probably about $25,000 a year spends $2,400 a year, about 10% of their total income, on these alternative financial services, just to cash a check, get a small loan, or things of that nature. So if the post office, which has a history of offering these kinds of financial services, simply would do that, they could save billions of dollars for these families who are, in vulnerable edges of society, and also help with the postal finances, although I would argue that the financial inclusion aspect is far more important.
We did have postal banking in the past, it seems. Why did it go away?
Well, there were postal savings accounts from 1911 to 1967. They earned about 2% interest, and at the time, savings and loans were offering much more in interest throughout the 1960s, and so they lost their market share. But the Postal Service did not really end giving financial services. You can still get a money order at the post office. In nine Latin American countries, you can do international money transfers through a system they have called Dinero Seguro. And so there are this remnants of postal banking, postal financial services being offered. And because of that, the Inspector General of the Post Office, who wrote a very remarkable paper, a white paper about this, says that this could occur, the Postal Service could explore this under their existing authority because they're already serving the public with certain kinds of financial services.
Seems like it would be a pretty big cultural shift at this point for people to do banking at the post office. How would we go about making that happen?
Well, I think it would be kind of a natural shift. Many countries around the world offer postal services. In fact, when the post office did offer a savings account, the number one group of people who used it were recent immigrants. And so I think that it would certainly be a better option for people who are unbanked and underbanked than having to go to a check cashing store or a payday lender. I think the cultural shift there would be very positive for those people who are being gouged, really, by these abusive, some would say, alternative financial services. They could save billions of dollars, and the post office, which is already a trusted source in most communities in America, would benefit from the increased services.
Do you have any idea how the post office itself might feel about this idea of adopting a banking aspect of their business?
Well, as I said, the Inspector General of the U.S. Postal Service has endorsed the practice. Some policymakers have also endorsed the practice. One problem right now is that the Board of Governors, which is the body that governs the Postal Service, it sets policy, it picks the Postmaster General, there are five vacancies on that board. So we don't know who will be picked for that board in the future and whether they would be receptive to this idea. But I will say that if the idea is that in an age of email, that mail volume is simply going to shrink over time, then the Postal Service has really two options. Either they can sort of shrink their footprint, or they could explore additional revenue streams. And considering that they have 35,000 different locations in every community in America, and in fact, 58% of all post offices are in zip codes that have zero or one bank branches in them. These are bank deserts, basically. The banking industry is basically pulled up out of low-income and rural communities. And the post office offers an alternative here. So you have this physical infrastructure, you have personnel, you have the trust of the nation. Why not offer services that aren't being offered by the traditional banking system?
Well, I want to dig into some of the advantages that you say postal banking would bring. One claim that you make is pretty dramatic. You say postal banking could end recessions. How would that work?
Well, it's a bit far afield, but the idea of a postal account, which could be given sort of automatically to everyone with a Social Security number, would have some benefit if the there was a recession, and instead of doing the kind of monetary policy that the Federal Reserve does right now, which is trying to increase asset prices and lower long-term mortgage rates, they could simply say, all right, we're going to put $200 in the postal accounts when there's a recession, and you need to spend that in the next month or it goes away. And what that would do would create a timely and targeted stimulus. You know, I mean, in 2008, George Bush, I remember getting my check in the mail, which was attempted stimulus for the economy. The postal account could deliver this much more efficiently and have the ability to really target that at the people who need it as sort of a stimulus for Main Street instead of Wall Street. So that's the idea behind that.
Okay, and there's another one that you write about, and this targets identity theft. And mm-hmm. you say that America is the place where half the identity theft in the world happens, and that kind of consumer fraud like we saw with Target recently. And the post office is ready-made to advance to a card with a chip right in it, and it could be at the vanguard of changing the way we do business in that sense.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the problems is that the banking system is sort of entrenched in delivering these credit and debit cards that have a magnetic stripe on them, which are very easily hacked, they're very easily copied, and things like that. Most of the world has gone to a chip structure, which also you have to use a PIN number, a personal identification number, in order to make a purchase. Since the post office has no existing sort of infrastructure with their cards, they could immediately go to chip and PIN and bring the rest of the retail world along, which I believe is where they want to go. If you listen to the National Federation of Retailers, they want to move to a more secure system. It makes sense for everybody, especially with the reputational loss of something like Target, which has really damaged their own reputation. So having the Postal Service jumpstart this process, I think, would be very beneficial.
And it sounds like they would have an ATM in there, and you could perform most basic banking functions there. Do you see this as something that's primarily aimed at lower-income people and people, as you say, in banking deserts? Or would this be something that could go kind of mainstream and be for all strata of society?
Well, I mean, I don't think that the post office would certainly turn down additional business, but I do see it as an opportunity to serve communities whose needs aren't being met right now by the traditional banking system. If banks wanted to deliver accounts and loans and things like that into these communities, they'd be doing it right now. They feel like it's either not profitable for them or for whatever reason, they're not doing it. And so I think instead of trying to regulate these payday lenders and check cashing stores that inevitably are very slippery and get through cracks in the law, it's better that instead of using regulation, let's use competition. And the competition could be from a publicly provided service, a public option for simple banking. And the post office could deliver it. And if people are interested in moving their money into a public agency instead of the traditional banking system, then so be it.
Now, how big an investment do you see this as being, and how soon a timeline toward the post office turning a profit?
Well, the post office could explore this through a pilot program tomorrow. They have the existing authority through their continuing relationship by through the use of money orders and the use of already existing financial services. They could try this in a few communities and see if the public is receptive to it. In terms of turning a profit, the biggest problem with the post office right now in terms of their profits is that they are required by law to pre-fund retirement benefits 75 years out, which is something no public agency or private business has to do, fund the retirement of people they've never even hired yet or who aren't even born yet. So the big problem with the post office that needs to be solved is eliminating this kind of crisis mentality that were it not for this pre-funding requirement, the post office would be profitable today. So in terms of being profitable with banking in the future, I think it does help go down that road over time, especially if it catches on. I mean, in the 1940s, 4 million people had a postal banking account, and that's really a floor for, I think, what you could see here. I think the people who are tired of being gouged by either alternative financial services or their own bank would welcome a new option for themselves.
Well, David, thank you so much for coming on and talking about your idea.
Thank you very much.
We've been talking to David Dayan, a freelance writer and contributor to Salon. We've got a link to his recent piece, How the Post Office Could Save the Economy and Change Your Life, on the Central Time Facebook page.
Coming up after the news, if we hear somebody wins the lottery twice or gets struck by lightning twice or flips a coin and comes up heads 100 times in a row, what do we make of that? Is this an unusual event? Yes, but unusual events like that happen all the time, according to our next guest, the author of The Improbability Principle, coming up after the news. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.